This program deals with themes of an adult nature and is intended for a mature audience.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings.
Our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world.
We must guard against the military-industrial complex.
Exopolitics, paranormal phenomena, and deep analysis of current world events from somewhere in the desert between Area 51 and Roswell, blasting across the planet. The Manticore Network proudly presents Fairy Tales, because the truth will set you free.
Headline edition, July 8, 1947. The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
The power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery, fight for liberty!
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Sooner or later, though, you always have to wake up.
Be skeptical, but don't close your mind.
Greetings to everyone around the world, and a warm welcome to another edition of Veritas, alternative media for discerning minds. I'm your host, Mel Fabregas, and I sincerely thank you for joining me once again. And if this is your first time, make yourself at home. I want to thank all our members for your loyalty and support. By popular demand, tonight's special guest is Neil Kramer, who returns with more mind-opening material. We'll discuss unreal meltdowns, machine versus human culture, and 9/11. Neil Kramer will be with us shortly. To listen to tonight's full show, become a Veritas member. Just go to our website, veritasradio.com, click on the subscribe button, and receive instant access. Why wait? For only $7.95 per month, you can listen to every program, audio and video, hundreds of hours in CD audio quality, and take Veritas with you wherever you go. Subscribe today. And visit the Veritas store, where you can purchase our 8GB USB drives with seasons 1 or 2 with bonus material. What bonus material, you ask? Go to the website and go to the store, and you'll see all the great information that's included. You can also buy MMS directly from us. And if you don't know what MMS is, listen to my interview with Jim Humble, entitled Jim Humble versus the FDA. Do yourself a favor and listen to it. And if you need to get in touch with me, click on the contact button of our website, and also join me on Facebook. And now, get ready to discuss unreal meltdowns and unplanned brokenness. Machine culture versus human culture, focusing one's consciousness on the roots of existence rather than the particulars. The events of 9/11, as we approach the 10th anniversary of this global life-changing event, and much more, with Neil Kramer, who's coming up next. This is Mel Fabregas, and you're listening to Veritas. Don't go anywhere.
This is Jim Mars, and you're listening to Veritas. Pay attention.
And he is back, writer, speaker, and philosopher, Neil Kramer. And to learn more about Neil and his work, make sure you visit his website, neilkramer.com. And directly from the beautiful Hood River, Oregon, I'm privileged to welcome Neil Kramer back to Veritas. Hello, Neil, and welcome back. How are you?
Hello, Mel. I'm very well. Thank you for having me back.
It's my pleasure. And I have to tell the audience that it's always great when you go to see one of your presentations in person. I had a blast watching the audience. Some of them didn't know who you were, but looking at them after you were done, it was honestly, it was transforming to see those people. And I hope that this being the second show that we do, and I still get feedback from that first presentation you made here on Veritas. So I'm looking forward to discussing all the topics that are currently all over us. So first of all, give us an update of what you've been doing lately.
Well, I've been working on a book for quite a while now, and I've just finally sort of come to a completion point with that. So that's begun to free up time now to work on other projects. I've also been working on a sort of small independent film in the background, which I've been collecting footage really from all over the states, from the East Coast and the West Coast. And I also mainly do workshops and one-to-one consultancy or teaching spiritual guidance and so on with people. So those three areas occupy most of my time, really. And I do travel around a lot. So I spend, you know, I've been spending a lot of time in New York. At the moment, I'm spending some time over in Washington State and in Oregon and California. So a lot of people who are interested in the subjects that you and your audience focus on live in that part of the world. And there's a lot of focus on moving from, you know, the material world, the 3D world, to something different, taking in greater frequencies of experience, looking at some of the deeper themes. And I think the whole question of spirituality or metaphysical realizations or whatever you wish to call it, more and more people are knowing that there's something very deep going on. So the audience, if you like, the attentiveness for the kind of things that I talk about is increasing year on year, really. So it's good for me to be in this part of the world because that's where a lot of the activity is. And of course, it's all over, but there is a distinct concentration over here at the moment on the West Coast of the US.
That's very interesting too, because we have people all over the world who listen, East Coast, West Coast. But I also find that there's more in the West Coast. And for those of you listening who are in the East Coast, don't get offended. It's just a fact. Why do you think there's more people who are looking for enlightenment, if you will, or the truth in the West Coast as opposed to the East Coast?
Well, that's a very interesting question. It's one that I've been pondering myself, really, because coming from Britain, you have a situation in Britain where there are concentrations of people who are looking at matters of consciousness, spirituality, and those kind of deep things that are pretty much outside the mainstream. And they tend to be concentrated in little pockets, areas, certain cities like Bath and Bristol, perhaps, and areas like Glastonbury and Wiltshire and Pembrokeshire. So there are these areas that you find, but because Britain's so small, it's a relatively small percentage of the population, of course. And in Europe, it's a similar kind of thing from what I can gather from friends and colleagues and other people in this business, if you like. They all report similar things. So it's very fragmented in a way. And of course, there's people interested in these things all over the planet, every country. And I'm sure, like myself, you can look at the stats from your website and you just get this map with all the little dots everywhere. And it's just very encouraging to see that from everywhere. But there are these little concentrations that center mainly on the US and mainly on the West Coast. And why that is, you know, it's probably a whole show in itself, to be honest. But some of the factors that influence that is, you know, America's a place with a very short history in the mainstream version of events. And that there's a correlation between that and people's sense of independence and sovereignty somehow. And some of it's very political and material, but there's also a spiritual and more esoteric side to that as well. So if you transpose that over into Europe, where there's this very, very rich, thick, ingrained culture, a lot of the cultural artifacts that we find in Europe particularly, they actually kind of have a gravity and they pull one's consciousness inwards in a way. And a lot of people who do have healthy, buoyant, flexible intellects will tend to pour that into the culture, into the music, into the art, the painting, and so on and so forth. And that's excellent, but it sometimes distracts people from what I call the inner work, from the real game of unfoldment, of spiritual awareness, of conscious deepening. And so over in the States, where there isn't that gravity of culture, there isn't that thousands of years of art and history, you know, that people can draw endlessly on, people just kind of do their own thing a little bit more. And they're still in the infancy in a way of creating the culture. So it's, you could say it's quite embryonic in the States, really, from a very broad historical point of view. Obviously, within one's own lifetime, it's not like that. But if you zoom out, 200, 300, 400 years is nothing. And there isn't anything of note beyond that. And even the, of course, the indigenous peoples, there's no great written records of that because it's largely oral traditions. So most mainstream Western Americans can't draw on that anyway. So you're looking at a phase of development in America where people are still generating the first few hundred years of culture. And it emanates, in a way, more from the people in certain areas than others. And this is perhaps a theme of what we're going to talk about today, because culture is very much related to consciousness and spirituality. And there are some very interesting parallels to draw and some things to look at. But certainly in the States, some areas are very conservative, of course. Some are very out there, very left field. And most people think of California when you think of that, and some of the northern regions perhaps. And obviously you've got all this interesting situation with growing marijuana and so on and so forth. But it becomes very stylized and people think it's just, you know, hippies and slackers with big beards, lay back, smoking pot or whatever. And that's the sort of TV cliche of that. But in actual fact, having traveled pretty much from LA to every major center up to the San Juan Islands off in the Pacific Northwest, I have a feel from moving through those places, through Los Angeles and San Francisco, Santa Cruz, Portland, Seattle, and so on, that there are distinct subcultures emerging that have, in a way, detached themselves from the mainstream culture and have started to generate their own images, basically, that don't come from corporations. And that has an effect on the consciousness of the people in that area. So people are more confident and more capable of generating their own culture. And of course, all humans can do it, but it is to some degree a matter of confidence. And in Europe, there is this view to some extent that a lot of the high culture and the high art is Mozart, is Schumann, is Bach, is, you know, all these painters like Bruegel, Picasso, whatever. And that has a gravity that in some ways dissuades people from putting their own energies into that. And so certainly the corporations don't really want people to generate their own culture. They want to foist it upon people. So when subcultures emerge, particularly in the States, but of course it perpetuates out everywhere and it propagates itself throughout different places. And these little subcultures are now beginning to emerge more and more in Europe. And Britain, you know, is my homeland and I'll always love it. And it'll always be my home to some extent, even though I travel widely and I'm always moving around right now. And Britain has, you know, some of the most fabulous culture you can possibly imagine. But it's just a matter of scale because there's a, you know, a relatively small amount of people there, although it's quite a lot on a small island. If you're talking about 0.1%, it's quite a small number. So 70 million people, say, whereas if you broaden that out to 320 million people in the States, then proportionately you get these concentrations in much higher areas.
And there is one country, and since that's why I love talking to you, because we can go and explore anything. There's one country in Europe where I feel, and I've been told this too, topics of the paranormal, UFOs, it's almost as if there's a filter there. And I'm talking of Germany. Even some of my listeners who try to listen to us, to subscribe to us, sometimes have a very hard time. Have you heard about Germany and the way they're perhaps censoring the paranormal and alternative media?
Well, I would actually broaden that out to Italy as well, if while we're on it. And of course, being
the Vatican.
Being sensitive to listeners who are German and Italian, we know there's tons of cool people out there doing important work and sure. research and their own unfoldment. We're not talking about that. We're generalizing quite heavily here, of course. But I understand the principle of what you're saying, and it is noticeable that when I sort of on a monthly basis, I'll look into my stats just to kind of keep an eye on what's occurring through my website and who's reading what and what people are responding to. And there's a noticeable lack of incoming traffic from Germany and from Italy in particular. Mm-hmm. And again, if you think of high European culture, and not just culture in terms of media, but also in terms of food and fashion and just what you see on the street and in the stores and so on, most of the stuff that people find very sexy and attractive comes from Italy and Germany. And certainly in the 18th and 19th century, some of the most fantastic culture in terms of music and art comes from Germany. And going a little bit further back, it all came from Italy. So you start to see the relationship between this very ornate, vivacious culture and consciousness, and how there's a relationship between the two. So yes, it's undeniable. I mean, some of my favorite philosophers are German, you know, most of them are German, in fact. And some of their most fabulous food, particularly being in an area of Queens in New York until recently, where it's really an Italian-American area, and the food is just fabulous. Sure. There's no denying that. I don't need to tell you about that because I know you're interested in food too.
Sure.
And it is unbelievable. But when you saturate people's newspapers and magazines and screens and billboards with the images that arise from that culture, for those who don't have the confidence and don't feel they have the capacity for their own sovereign development and the unfoldment of their own creativity, then one finds that there is a distinct gravitation into this vortex of culture because it's so consuming. I mean, you could spend your whole life just investigating all the different trails and threads through these cultural pathways. And so I have found in my studies, personally and professionally, if you like, that culture is a very important part of this. And of course, as you point out, you do get these centers of power, you do get these kind of control points in the system, such as the Vatican and such as a lot of the key European banking emanating from Germany, although it may present itself in Belgium and so on, and London. A lot of the the muscle, if you like, is German. And there is an absence in the mainstream in those two countries of what you might call free-thinking, independent, meaningful media. There's not as much of it there. There is some, and again, don't anyone get upset. Just get over yourself if you're doing that, because it's not about you. It's about the people who are making the media.
And you probably have heard of the image from Julia Roberts in London that was removed because apparently in Britain they passed a law where images cannot be airbrushed as they are because it's misleading to younger girls. Basically, yeah. That they're trying to look like them when it's not true. What's your take on that?
Well, it's a facet of the mediaplex that we're dealing with simulations very often. And we're dealing with chimeras. You're dealing with fabrications of reality, which is ironic because the media itself is an aspect of what I call the construct. And I'm gonna unpack some of these concepts and words if anyone isn't familiar with it. And so to see that go to a lower level, sometimes it's encouraging because you can say, well, yeah, to airbrush somebody's pimples or wrinkles or gray hairs out is okay maybe for a Coca-Cola advert or something. But when it's pushed into 12, 13, 14-year-old kids' faces who are at a very impressionable age, you know, you get these outbreaks of bulimia and anorexia because they think that to be successful and to be popular, you have to be thin and you have to have pristine skin and you have to have perfect teeth and you have to have shiny, thick, glossy hair and all the rest of it. And it seems a bit silly, really, particularly to people who concentrate their energies into the sort of topics that you cover. It seems a bit silly, all of this. And yet we know that a lot of our friends and family are very much affected by it. And when people go out to shop or to entertain themselves or buy books in the bookstore, they're affected by these images. It affects what people do and it affects what clothes you pick off the rail. And so it does have a very powerful influence. And, you know, it's a very interesting thing. And it brings me to one of the first things I wanted to cover, really, which is I want to draw a very clear distinction here between human culture and machine culture. Now, people may hear me and may have heard me being very critical of culture, and I am intensely so, but I'm not talking about organic human culture when I'm doing that. I'm not talking about what arises naturally from the hearts and minds of men and women with all its unique artistry and skill and emotion and texture.
Synthetic.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about synthetic culture, yeah. Yes. I'm talking about what constitutes really the mainstream culture, or as I like to call it, machine culture. So machine culture comes from the construct, which I'll come to in a moment, and it is an entertainment and it is a distraction that is offered up really as the primary conventional sedative for a population whose consciousness is being very actively contained. And when consciousness is always restricted in this way, as it is by the construct, it becomes tense. It develops this tension, just like a steel in a bridge or something. And that tension needs to be periodically released. Otherwise, those human minds would begin to break down and there would be no use for good or ill. And so that release, that pressure valve, comes through machine culture. Now, I say that machine culture is an aspect of the construct. What do I mean by the construct? Well, the construct is a reality model, and it's a fake reality model that is really instilled in humans from birth. And it's a way of seeing the world that tells the brain what to do with the incoming sensory data. So the construct is a description of the world. It tells us what things are, how to use them, and what their purpose is. And from childhood, this fake reality, this construct, is inculcated into all human minds, especially in the West. And every famous face, every working man and woman, they all propagate this construct. And we're compelled to follow its model, its rules and regulations, its MO. And so after a while, being conditioned in this one way of looking at the world from such a very early age and with such vigorous repetition, really, I would say by the age of 20, whenever we see a thing or smell a thing or taste a thing, we are encountering not reality, but the construct. Okay, so that's a very important distinction to make. And that construct is what creates machine culture, which is not organic, which is not asymmetrical, and which is not really benefiting mankind. And that's a very important part of control in the West, is culture. And it all seems so harmless, this machine culture. It all seems so trifling. You know, it's just fun. It's just television. What does it matter? It doesn't really do anything. But it has a very, very profound influence on us. And I say here that the construct is put into us from an early age and with this vigorous repetition. And let's just consider that for a moment, repetition. Now, I would say that nothing is more symptomatic of the 21st to the 21st century social malaise than repetition. Doing the same damn thing over and over and over again. Same office, the same drive to work, the same routines. Eat at this time, sleep at this time, watch TV, eat, work, sleep, repeat. And that is reality. That is reality of most people's daily lives. Drudgery, spirit-crushing tedium. And that repetition is a hallmark of machine culture. And it actually, the repetition in the media amplifies itself into repetition in people's lives. And that is what begins to contain consciousness. And it's very clever, and it's been done for quite a long time. And it makes people focus on just the things in life that are relatively meaningless. It tends to take people away from what is substantial, and it moves them towards what is insubstantial. And it keeps them there. And when you can do that with somebody from 0 to 90, then you win, because you're keeping consciousness at a certain vibration, at a certain level, with a certain intelligence. And when it's there, you can do various things with it. You can do what you want with it. You can keep people stupid and just milk them for money and labor, or you can do more interesting, higher dimensional things and feed on that consciousness as a power source. Just in a similar way, the metaphor was put forward from Gnostic principles in The Matrix, with humans being compared to little Duracell batteries by Morpheus, as he's explaining this to the character Neo, mm-hmm. or to Thomas Anderson. And that's very much what can occur. So we have to be very careful of this, and we have to understand that there are two cultures, this human culture and this machine culture. And when we can differentiate the two, you can begin to make sense of what's wrong with television and what's wrong with the movies and what's wrong with Hollywood and what's wrong with Madison Avenue. You can begin to make sense of that, and you can draw out the good parts of it and the bad parts of it. And it, you know, everything, as I say, from music, from major labels to little independent labels, live music, CDs, Blu-ray, you know, you have to wade through this incredible miasma of media artifacts to get a clear idea and say, okay, I can begin to discern now between one and the other. And a very simple way of doing it is that machine culture is always repetitive and always symmetrical, and human culture is always spontaneous and is always asymmetrical. It's irregular, beautifully irregular. And that can't be simulated very well by the construct. It can't do that very well. So once you start to just run with that, experiment with that notion, you can see it out there in the field, and you can make better sense of what's going on around you.
Or as I call it, it's production, consumption, pleasure. And to that, we can actually add debt. But since we're talking about the artificial or the synthetic construct, I've been thinking lately that we're more dependent now on technology than we ever have. In other words, have we turned into cyborgs that can't take a step without having a gadget?
Well, that's a very profound question. And I would say that when we talk about technology, technology really now underpins what I would call the particulars of life. And you could say that there are essentially two main focuses for human consciousness in this modern world. The first type of consciousness focuses on the particulars of life, the things, the objects, and the forms. And technology makes up a large part of that for a lot of people now. The other type of consciousness focuses on what we might say is the roots of life. And from this, you can say, quite plainly and accurately, in my view, that there are two types of people who represent that, and they focus pretty exclusively on one or the other, either on the particulars or on the roots. And as unsurprisingly as one might guess, the overwhelming majority of people choose to focus on the particulars of life, the technology, the forms, the objects, the things, the routines, the patterns. And they gravitate towards this. And again, we get that repetitive behavior for this whole prepackaged reality model. And just going back to what I was saying, you can begin to see the connection now between culture focusing on the particulars of life and low consciousness. And there's a direct correlation there. And there's also a direct reference between the amount of mental and emotional investment we put in those particulars into our laptops and our cell phones and our iPads and our refrigerators and cars and air conditioning and everything technologically, but also all the other things as well. There's a distinction to be made here to say the more we invest in those things, the less we can put energy into any form of spiritual or metaphysical realization. So if all your consciousness is poured into supporting the acquisition and the veneration of your various objects, routines, and experiences, then those objects begin to represent your life and they get imbued with this unreal manifestation that is not just the object, it's actually part of you. And that's not very healthy, and that is attachment in the classic Buddhist sense. We become attached, and attachment brings suffering. So it's hardly a new concept, this, but in a world that is so filled with objects, and admittedly, of course, many of them are very shiny and very attractive and very alluring, and we are drawn to them. And when the new Apple product comes out, it does look pretty sexy, and it's all chrome and polished and beautiful curved plastics and so on. It is nice. It is okay in itself, but it's what we attribute to it. We pour not only our time into these things, but also our emotions become attached very distinctly and very, you know, they become glued to it. And that's where you start to run into problems. And, you know, some people claim to have, oh, well, that's all very well, but I have higher things going on. I have religious faith. People, you know, people in America, a lot of people go to church. A lot of people have this going on in their lives, much more so than Europe. But the consciousness really isn't in it. It just makes them feel better, and it serves as a moral touchstone for agreeable social conduct in one way. So not to take away, if someone chooses to do that, fine. But if you really probe somebody on that, their consciousness, their heart really isn't in it. It's more to do with morality and conduct and tradition. And, you know, a few people are compelled to focus on the roots of existence, the origin, the structure, the purpose of life, and what consciousness seems to underpin that. And so to give you a nice analogy of this, I was just talking about this with somebody last night, actually. If we were to map life in terms of filmmaking terminology, movie making, which we're all a little familiar with, we could say that those who are drawn to the particulars of life, those who are drawn to form, tend to occupy themselves largely with the props and the set and the scenery. And the script is never really questioned, and the overall direction and tone of the project is left completely to this imagined outside agency. Whereas in contrast, those who find themselves contemplating the roots of the world, as I say, immediately want to take a look at the script, and they want to take a walk behind the set, and they want to have a chat with the director. You know, who's directing this thing? And after a while, it becomes obvious that actually the director isn't actually someone outside oneself at all. And as this becomes more clearly understood as one unfolds, the entire concept of the film changes. The props, the set, the scenery, the stuff, they become things that are self-created rather than bought in. And this raises a big question, which is this: what is the film about? And this takes us back to culture, the media, and the images that saturate our screens and pages. These are the things that program what most people do with their lives, or to refer to our metaphor, what sort of film they make.
Absolutely. And let's take a quick detour now, because there's too many things happening around the world. And you call it an unreal meltdown. What is happening worldwide? People think that this is happening in the United States and Europe, but it's happening everywhere.
Yes.
You consider this to be unreal, meaning orchestrated?
I think there's two very interesting things going on at the same time. The meltdown, the financial meltdown, the social breakdown, all those things that we see in these uprisings, fake and real, and something in between, all those things we see on the screen. And I was talking to a man last night from Birmingham, I said, it's funny, isn't it? I said, here we are in the States, 6,000 miles away from Britain, and our cities are on fire.
Yes.
Our towns and cities, London, Birmingham, Manchester, and loads of other cities in between. There's people in the streets rioting, throwing things through windows, setting things on fire. People are getting killed. There's all kinds of things happening. Isn't that ironic? You know, we come to the heart of the beast in a way, to the big, mighty America with its military and its huge economy. And yet it's this little island that is almost the flagship of capitalism for the last 200 or 300 years, and it's not functioning. It doesn't appear to be functioning. Now, I would say that all major meltdowns that are covered are to some extent unreal. And that is that controlled stand downs effectively release pressure in the underclass in Britain. In Britain, there is a very distinct class system. Some people think it's gone away, but it never went away. And from kind of upper and middle and working class people, a new class really arose in the 60s and 70s, but it came to age through Reagan and Thatcher politics and through some of the destructive behavior that they brought to America and Britain. And it created an underclass. And this is a class of people in Britain, millions of them, very ethnically diverse, from white, black, yellow, red, blue, green, everybody. And that underclass has no social mobility. And watching the media and wanting the objects and the particulars from that system, from that construct, is very confusing for the underclass, because they can't really get it. They don't really have many options for getting to that stuff. And the idea of being able to work hard and make progress and climb the ladder is a total fantasy for those people. It's not actually possible. And so it doesn't take much for those people to run out in the streets and do something aggressive. It doesn't take much. And a lot of people who analyze this kind of stuff would say, well, that little tinderbox is always kept there on hand, just ready to throw a spark into at the right moment. And if you analyze some of the police tactics, rather than being inadequate and unwise in terms of a stand down to let looters loot and let rioters riot, it was very organized, in my view. And it's just a classic problem reaction solution, as people like to refer to it nowadays.
Right.
And if you want to attain greater numbers of security forces on the street, whether they're public or private or military or whatever, the best way to do it is create such a sense of social unease, particularly that the middle class feel, that they will do anything to have security.
And they'll beg for it.
They will throw their freedoms away for that security.
Right.
And I think if you just take a cool view and just step back from it and compare the mainstream, the alternative, and your own news kind of research, and put those three things together, then you can see there's distinct patterns that were used throughout history. The Romans were doing this 2,000 years ago to great effect. The Nazis and the socialist organizations from which they sprang, they were doing this in the 1930s. And it's just classic techniques, really. And it's to bring greater security. So most meltdowns that I see on the television, not that I watch it too often, but of course, watching these little videos on the internet and so on, you get a vision of what is being pumped out through CNN and BBC and so on. Those meltdowns are unreal. And people sometimes say to me, you know, do you think Obama and Cameron and all the rest of them, do you think they really know what's going on in the world? You know, are they genuinely like shocked by this, or do they know all about it? Do they know the master plan or what? And the short answer is, do I think Obama and Cameron know what's going on? Is no, I don't think they do. Because if they did, they wouldn't look convincing in the roles that they're obliged to carry out. So do they know a bit more than is commonly understood? Sure, of course they do. They know a little bit more than the mainstream people do. But the real story, the long strategy, the big game, they know next to nothing about. In fact, I would say the people who listen to this show know more than most of those kind of people. And yet, if we shift now, focus a little bit, so we've got this unreal meltdown. But I also think, just to play on those words a little bit, there's like an unplanned brokenness as well. And I would say certainly from my previous writings on my blog that used to be called The Cleaver, most of which has all been shifted over to neilkramer.com now, really from 2005 onwards, right up to today, I personally have observed a distinct dislocation of what once looked like a pretty indomitable power base. And I have watched the subsequent countermeasures that the control system has deployed to compensate for their own inherent failings. And now, in August 2011, I'm pretty much satisfied of one simple thing, which is that the control system is beginning to break down, is beginning to fail. And so that unplanned brokenness is something that has just arisen. And I think they're aware of it. And I think that a lot of the tactics we're seeing are to counterbalance that. So, you know, at first it appears to be some sort of controlled economic demolition, and you've got these hackers and leakers and negative equity in the housing market and crumbling economies and fiscal meltdown and all the tribalism and factions in the Middle East and so on. And all these domestic catastrophes, if you look again closely, they do bear the faint smears of what you might think of as geopolitical forgery.
Yeah.
And of course, there's much truth in the hidden hand of something greater controlling that. However, there is a distinct jettisoning of beliefs in the people, and the intelligence services are struggling to do something about that because the people aren't believing the polarity of good and evil anymore in quite the same way of the haves and the have-nots. They're not believing that anymore. So despite being offered up this assortment of leakers and hackers and revolutionaries, many of whom are on the payroll, not all of them, but some of them, there is this healthy slice of the populace who are, obstinately refusing to buy the old subterfuges, to buy the old cons of the control system. And, it's very clear to see that. And it's often the case that when something important is going down, something big, just before that happens, the control system, using the constructs of the media, will run an entirely irrelevant news item to suck in the sort of lowest common denominator of the viewing public. And in the US recently, this has passed by now, but, you know, we had this case of this Anthony Weiner guy who was kind of taking photographs of himself and sending it to people. And he's like a politician who should know better. And we had this thing of the Casey Anthony trial.
Right, right.
This this woman who allegedly murdered a child. And, you know, we're told that this stuff captivates the American public. And it doesn't do anything of the kind. It does nothing of the kind. The only people it's of any relevance to are the families affected by these incidents, which is a tiny number of unfortunate souls, and some who have similar experiences, of course, but it's a grotesque sideshow of absolutely no consequence to what's actually unfolding in the dynamics of real life, you know?
It's a distraction, and I keep saying it, and I'm a parent of a small child, so my heart goes out there, but
absolutely,
it's only one story. There are millions of other stories out there, and the media was giving them 24/7 coverage to this case. What about the other people who are dying in Afghanistan and Iraq, all the children, and everywhere around the world? You see what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, children die every day, adults die every day, but the media decide to pull out very particular cases out of the bag, and they sort of, as you say, carpet bomb the screens with it. And it's not arbitrarily chosen. It's carefully chosen, carefully manufactured broadcast, carefully selected for certain mental conditioning and for a certain demographic of the population. My observation is that whenever you see this, whenever there's some big thing going on and on and on, whether it's O.J. Simpson or Michael Jackson or Casey Anthony, shortly afterwards something big happens.
Yes.
And literally, if you time those events and look at some meaningless Paris Hilton news story that runs for like 3 weeks, usually something else, bang, big happens after that. And it means that the events leading up to that weren't reported in the mainstream. You just get the end result. And so when something big goes down, unless you're following it yourself already through your own private independent inquiries, it's not really there in the media. It's not really shown to us. And it's just crazy. And again, you can see some of the tactics that are being used. In the UK, there was this very, very trashy newspaper, News of the World, which was caught hacking into people's cell phones, mobile phones. And this story droned on and on and on for months. You know, Rupert Murdoch, and the paper has been dismantled now. And, you know, what's going on here? And the clue is in David Cameron, the British Prime Minister, and Cameron's recent response to this, which was, he said that only a completely new system of media regulation would meet public demand. Now, expand this out to the whole internet and you start to get the general idea. Media regulation. What they're talking about is freedom of information regulation. So forget freedom of information requests and all that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the ability for independent journalists and independent investigators to do stuff is now disappearing before our very eyes because of what looks like disgraceful behavior again. So the disgraceful behavior of journalists hacking into, you know, families who've lost people in Iraq and young mothers and movie stars who are going through messy divorces or whatever, that's disgraceful and stupid. The behavior of people on the streets, you know, beating people up, knifing people, stealing plasma televisions and iPads, that's stupid and disgraceful. It's the same thing. It's the same thing, but one is carried on one level and one is carried on another level. And what they're attempting to do is say, look at how messy this is. Would you like us to clear it up? And everybody nods, yes, please, please clear it up. And they say, right, the way we do that is by sanitizing and formalizing everything. And we can achieve that by centralizing a lot of the decision making and a lot of the money and a lot of the security. And it's an old tale once again, which you can trace back thousands of years. This is nothing new. The only thing that's new is because the media is so proliferated now, there's so much of it, so many contact points with the media for us to lay our hands upon, that we can see it. We can actually see it taking place now. We can see the manipulation quite clearly, and it's barely hidden anymore. They don't even bother to do a cover story, to have a front. You know, they don't bother to do that anymore. They just do it right in front of your eyes. Because as we said, back to the beginning of this conversation, most people are so saturated with the nonsense of machine culture that they really couldn't care less about what's actually going on in the world. They just want it fed to them from the screen, and they want the answers fed to them from the screen. So that is a problem, and that is a symptom of a very diseased human consciousness. And in some ways, again, you have to really come outside yourself to say this, and you have to move away from your own particular desires and needs and preservation, and you really zoom out and say, well, this is part of a very necessary breakdown, and some of it is unplanned, and many parts of it, as we said earlier, are unreal as well. And those two things are occurring at the same time, which makes it very interesting. But the unplanned part of it is very important, because consciousness can only stay contained for so long until it begins to break through. And when it begins to break through, as I mentioned recently in a conference, it sometimes is very messy indeed, and it's very aggressive, and people get hurt, and there's cuts and bruises, to say the least. But that is a sign in some ways that the containment is beginning to fail. And again, if people want to look for precedents for this, you can go through the mainstream history books. Also ensure, of course, always that we look at the revisionist, the esoteric, the alternative history versions. And you can see this thing happening over and over again. And from a very, very broad point of view, from Hindu spiritual philosophy, this cycle of destructiveness and a very limited percentage, if you like, of consciousness and of light and of goodness, to use an old-fashioned word, when those things are out of balance, it's kind of like the whole place is rebooting itself, it's resetting itself, is reformatting itself like an old corrupted hard drive. There's no point in going repairing those little bad sectors. You just throw the thing out and you get a new one.
Right. And a minute ago, you were mentioning how sometimes we're fed a not to, to undermine the stories of again, the child that was killed, Casey Anthony.
But no, we remember, of course
not. Yeah, right. But we remember in the summer of 2001, Chandra Levy and the congressman who supposedly having an affair,
yes,
and she was murdered. And that was almost 24/7. All of a sudden, 9/11 happened. And
that's
that
right.
Immediately was forgotten. Right now, recently, we had Donald Trump talking about the birth certificate, Obama's birth certificate, and it was getting some traction. All of a sudden, May 1st, Osama bin Laden is allegedly found and killed. What's your take on that, what I call a PSYOP operation?
Well, the bad news is that they do this all the time, and they take media artifacts and real life events and fabricated events, and they put them all on the table like little, you know, counters on a game board, and think, right, if we push this piece here, then we can do that with this piece, and that means we can take that piece off the board altogether. And so there are these people sat there strategically figuring this stuff out, putting it into computers, modeling various outcomes, and saying, well, according to our think tanks and institutes and foundations, this sort of thing has a very limited exposure. So you can say something quite shocking, and in 7 days, it's kind of forgotten, really. And you can say something quite profound, and if it's placed between two certain news items of a certain tonality, the profundity of that thing is lost on people, and it gets moved to a completely different level of consciousness. It's kind of like an optical illusion. You know, you put a certain line next to another line, and it can look a lot shorter, even though it's this, exactly the same length, because of the contrast,
right,
between the two things. And so it is with news. So sometimes one of the most revealing things is to look at the priority and what is before one item and what is after a particular item, and you can see that play out. And yes, they do, of course, want to get the dirty laundry out there in their own way. So if you've got something bad to say, it's usually preferable for you to say it in your own way and get it over and done with, and then throw something else out there to divert people. That's better than someone else saying, we found that there's something wrong here. We found that there's something fishy about 9/11. and we're going to reveal all this data. And of course, taking that as an example, the best thing to do is say, yeah, there is something wrong, and here's what it is. And so they present that as an alternative 9/11 scenario that sucks up most of those who don't believe the mainstream message, believe another fake message, which is the alternative conspiracy scenario, which is also fake. So if you can get out there and own that media, which of course is largely the case, then that's possible. But you know, this conspiracy thing, as I say, it's important to recognize that conspiracy is just people planning to do something. It's people getting together to discuss something that they're going to carry out. That's right. Really where the word comes from. Mm-hmm. And of course, we all do that every day. You know, I might sit down and discuss with somebody that I'm going to go out and buy some bananas later on. You know, that's a conspiracy, right? So we needn't worry too much about this stuff. The thing that's most interesting is that the unplanned element of it, the unplanned brokenness, is that people aren't believing it anymore. So although you get a lot of sedated consciousness and a lot of low-level stuff, people aren't quite believing it anymore. Even the old conservative, Republican, old, you know, very sort of prim and proper folk of this country and my country and others, even those people are starting to think, well, I don't know what is going on, but I know that this is nonsense. I know that this is nonsense. And that's happening in much greater numbers now, because people are starting to realize that we have to start to do things a slightly different way. And the problem is that most people aren't sure how to go about that. And if you don't have any spiritual aspect in your life, then people don't have the sort of confidence to talk about the roots of these things. They just want to move the pieces around. And that's not good enough. You've got to go a bit deeper than that.
And I found interesting that the father of four who's shot and killed by English police, all of a sudden the riot started, but the media is now saying that the riots are related to the economy. Almost as if they're switching one story to the other to plant that seed in people's minds, because as you say, this is unraveling, the wheels are falling from the truck, and the system is collapsing. And the only thing they have left in order to control the population would be by bringing more law enforcement, by bringing more military. And people will not accept that unless there's a catalyst. In this case, is the riots. So people are begging for that security. And in the end, it's almost the Weimar Republic. They request more security, and then you have none.
I think it's very important when we look at things like this, when we think about what you just said, it's very important to realize that the control system is not all powerful. It does not control all counters on the board. All it controls is people's confidence in themselves.
Yeah.
And if you can remove somebody's confidence in themselves, then you've got them, basically. It's very, very, very important indeed. It's a significant thing of great consequence in our lives to understand at a deep level the control system, what some people call the New World Order, the Illuminati, these different groups. You can only sort of really see that in terms of one particular slice of history. And saying the Illuminati is hugely inaccurate in actual fact, because that is just a very, very modern projection of a very, very old attempt to control things. And this thing goes back, I would say, probably about 25,000 years. So it's nothing to do with the Illuminati. They're just, you know, the guys with the suits on at the moment, but they're just running the old program. But when you look at this thing, and certainly when you broaden this out, and perhaps we can talk about this in the second section, mm-hmm. The most significant thing with all of this is not the symptoms, is not the stuff that's thrown out there, that's spilled out onto the table. It's where that comes from, and it's where that is designed to come from a perspective of higher consciousness. And so anybody who's looking at geopolitical affairs, anyone who's looking at politics and the military-industrial complex and all these black ops and psyops and so on, if you leave out spirit, if you leave out metaphysics about what underpins this stuff, Where does this come from? Why do people behave like that? If you leave those questions out, then you'll just chase your own tail ad infinitum. That's all that will ever happen. You'll be running for something that you can never quite get. We cannot leave out the questions of the origins, the roots of these things. And so there is a time to look at the details and the particulars of what occurs in our world and to pore over with a little tooth comb and a, you know, magnifying glass, all the different pieces, and play Sherlock Holmes and do investigations. There's a time for that and there's a place for that. But sometimes we have to just say, right, that is messed up and this weird stuff is going on and the world is not the way we thought it was, right? Let's just draw a line under that for the moment and say that that is pretty much the case. Now, where does that come from? Why do people do that? And fundamentally, how can we change that? And that is a question of what some people call spirit, of what some people would say, well, you're talking about metaphysical underpinnings of why do minds find themselves in that state, and why would potentially a paradise planet find itself in such a mess? Is that just humans being stupid, or is something else going on? And that's where a lot of answers come from, and that's where a lot of sense comes from, and most importantly, that's where a lot of hope comes from. Because once you understand the metaphysical underpinnings of this, the spiritual reality of this, it's actually not half as bad as one thinks it is, and it's not as gloomy. And as I've said before to people, doom is a self-indulgence. So to go around being doomy and to constantly listen to podcasts of doom and to listen to media of doom, it's just doom porn, basically. That's what it is, and it's no good, and it doesn't get anywhere. It doesn't lead anywhere. So you have to say, well, yeah, there's the doom. Well done. You've seen it. Well done. You've mapped it out. Now what? What are you actually going to do about that? Because if you think you can't do anything, then that is the result achieved as far as those purveyors of doom go. But what we should be saying is, well, there is something we can do about this. And there are steps that can be taken, but none of that mechanism, none of that sacred path, none of that warrior's path, if you really want to talk about this thing in that sense, it is a warrior's path, because it's not easy, this business. It's not dancing around on hills in white robes, not in the slightest. This is a battle of consciousness, and this is a serious business. That sort of path is never, ever talked about in the media, in the mainstream, in normal society whatsoever. You never see it. And it doesn't matter what TV channel it is and how interesting it looks on the surface. The roots of life, and those who are interested in the roots of life, you have to go outside the mainstream and seek where that comes from, because that is where the source of our power lies. And that is where our history lies. And to understand where we are now, we have to look at our lineage and look at our heritage and think, well, this must have occurred before. How did they get out of it? You know, what are we to do? There must be other people who can see this. It's not just a few people on alternative forums. There must be a lot of people who know this is going on and can do something about it. We have to create that potential, and we have to connect with those people in our real lives. So it's not a time for complacency, this, and it's not a time for doom pornography. This is a time for standing upright and saying, right, I'm going to claim my power to actually do something about this. And because I have the capacity to be a higher being and to act with moral conduct and to act with integrity and to act with honor and to act with power, then I can do something very significant here. And that is a warrior's path, and that is a spiritual path.
And we have to take our one and only intermission, but the way I see it, if you're going to be discussing doom, gloom, fear, and you don't offer a solution, then you're simply part of the problem. But tell us, Neil, how to get in touch with your work, and how do people get in touch with you, your presentations, your book, the movie?
Okay. Well, in short, if you go to neilkramer.com, everything is available from there. And so as new things come out, they will be available from the website. There is a store on the website with various audiobooks and other items in there. There's essays, interviews, videos, etc., and so on and so forth. Anybody who's interested in the teaching work I do, you can get details of that on there too. There's also links to Facebook where there are other kinds of information there. So that's the point to go to, neilkramer.com.
Excellent. And we have so much more to discuss on segment two. I'd also like to discuss some of the elements from the last presentation I saw, which was mind-bending. Folks, don't go anywhere. I'm here with Neil Kramer. This is Mel Fabregas, and you're listening to Veritas. Don't go anywhere. Thank you very much for listening. We're going to talk more with our special guest in our members section. If you're not a member, just head on over to our website, veritasshow.com, and click on the subscribe link to listen to the rest of the show. As a member, have you subscribed to the iTunes link? Let iTunes download all segments of each new show automatically. There's a link in the members section. Just click on it and let iTunes do the rest. We'll take a short intermission, listen to some music, and we'll be right back with more. Enjoy. We'll be right back.
This is Dr. Judy Wood, and you're listening to Veritas Radio.